Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. I am Jake Cunningham, a new host for my first time here, so let's hope it doesn't go too badly. And joining me is your regular correspondent, Helen Seymour. Hi, Helen.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about The Childhood of a Leader, a new release which follows the childhood of a leader.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, they really summed it up in the title, didn't they?
They absolutely have.
I mean, you almost don't need to go and watch it, do you?
Don't bother. No. Actually, we want to talk about that, talk about titles and think.
Yes, because I think that is a key element of this film, is the title of it and how much information that actually gives you going into the film. We will discuss that later on, but I'd like to begin the show by mentioning asking you about your favourite recent child performances in film. Over the last couple of years.
There's been a lot, hasn't there, of some really cracking performances. Ones that spring to mind automatically, Jacob Tremblay in Room.
Yes, yeah, fantastic performance. And went on to play the young Will Fort character in The Last Man on Earth on telly.
Did he?
Yeah, and he's very good in that as
Did
well.
He?
And he gets to call him a turd.
Can you see the little glint in his eye as he does it?
Deli's thrilled.
Oh, mate, anyone in The Fooling. I love The Fooling.
Yep, so Maisie Williams in the lead, who we know as Arya Stark from Game of Thrones. Really interesting film. A lot of the time, if we think of films with that cover teenage girls, it can be a bit melodramatic, almost, and that sense of the loud teenager can be a bit overbearing.
Yeah,
but everyone in that film really keeps it on a subtle level, and when they do need to engage in a very angry way, it doesn't seem over the top, which unfortunately is something that we encounter a lot of the time.
I totally agree. There's also an excellent bit with Maisie Williams where she's telling her mom about some really bad news and she laughs as she says it because it's like she can't believe it, and it's so well done. It's really excellent. Ezra Miller in We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yep, fantastic performance.
Kind of similar vein of this film in a little way.
Yes, definitely, and flavours of you've got Goodnight Mummy in there as well.
Ezra and Lucas Schwartz.
Yep, Ezra Miller we've got on screen at the moment briefly in Suicide Squad. that's the noise of complete and utter love for that film coming from
That's
him.
The noise I make when I'm in love.
Yeah. So Ezra Miller's an interesting one because we know him from We Need to Talk About Kevin. He was very good in The Perks of Being a Wallflower as well. And then seeing him in a role like The Flash, I think he's got such an interesting face, and like we're used to in these really interesting roles, and I can't see him as a superhero.
No. He's kind of the quirky, off the wall, doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
Not the hero.
But we'll see. We'll see. But I hope he changes that perspective.
I mean, he probably will.
He's fantastic actor.
He's excellent. A little shout out to Alex Lawther, who plays the young Alan Turing in The Imitation Game. Such a standout performance.
Probably the highlight of that film.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm so excited to see what Alex Lawther does next.
And
what about you?
Well, from that year, we also had Boyhood, which I think both of us really loved. And you've got Ella Catrain and Richard Linklater's daughter, Lorelai, who really make that film believable, because a lot of that film is that you have to go with it. The plot relies on you believing in these people.
Yeah.
They really capture that. I think Lorelai, the fact that she's acting under a dad, is perhaps even more of a challenge as well.
Yeah.
And so it seems a shame that the film ends up being called Boyhood, because she's such an integral part of that film as well.
Totally. And it's not, she doesn't get any, the main poster is, you know, the young boy. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was going to be called 12 Years.
But
oh, then
was
another
it?
Film came out.
That began. 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah. So then it got changed to Boyhood.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. I wasn't thrilled by the BFG, as people know. Well, the girl in the... I feel bad talking badly about children.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand what you mean. It's like you've put in a top effort. Like,
yeah.
That's great stuff. And I think, because I liked the BFG and I liked the girl in it, and the same goes with Neil Sethi in The Jungle Book. A lot of people had issues with Neil Sethi in The Jungle Book.
Oh, I liked him.
Yeah, and yeah. I liked him a lot. And I think because he acted that whole film against a green screen.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to give him even more credit for that, because that's amazing that he managed to deliver that performance acting against blue rocks and shapes and tennis balls. I think that's pretty amazing.
I agree. I think there's a lot of kind of really exciting child actors around, kind of, you know, like you were saying, sometimes it's a bit overdramatic, but lately, I don't know what they're doing in drama school, but they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's TV, but Stranger Things on Netflix, that's core cast, is four young boys and a girl, Millie Bobby Brown, as the character Eleven, who is phenomenal. It's such an incredible performance, and all the boys in it are so likable. It's got that Steven Spielberg-y E.T. vibe that gets you into these lives of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like J.J. Abrams' Super 8 with Elle Fanning. As soon as these kids give a performance that feels honest, then you go with them.
Yes.
And it's so much easier to empathise with a child because of their innocence, because of their honesty, and you can relate to them much quicker. And if they can, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
If a child actor can do that, then they've got you. Then it's great.
You should open your own film school. Drama school.
So The Childhood of a Leader is the debut film from Brady Corbett, who's an actor. He's appeared in small roles. He recently appeared in While We're Young, Noah Baumbach's film, as a childhood friend of Adam Driver's character, and lots of other TV and film. This is his first effort. Premiered at Venice last year, and he won an award for debut film and direction. He actually had this idea almost 10 years ago to tell this, to tell exactly as the title says, the elements or moments lifted from the childhood of someone that would become this fascist-y leader that's kind of a blend. You've got Stalin-y, Hitler-y, lots of different elements. It's never explicitly stated who this person is, but that was his goal. And he had this idea a long time ago, but just felt, that's my first film, it's too big. I can't possibly go out and do that as my first thing. But then eventually he got talked into it by his wife, and here we have this wonderful, grand, decaying, beautiful film.
It's stunning. Oh, there's so much. It's so rich. There's so much to devour.
Mm.
It's like a horror that slowly like crawls up your leg. And,
yeah. And the awful thing about it is that it's so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like, was I like that as a child? Could I be a fascist leader? Oh no. what have I done?
Because it's set in, there's three main parts and then a coda at the end.
And there's an overture at the start.
An overture at the start, that's it. And the three main parts are set into, they're called tantrums, which just totally belittles the whole thing and makes it so relatable.
Mm.
And we were saying right at the beginning, it's maybe a little on the nose.
Yes, this is the first thing that I wrote down on my notebook. So we've got the name of the film, and then the first thing that we actually see of any form of person, because prior to that there's dark images and historical archival footage of war. But we see Tom Sweet as Prescott, this young child in an angel costume preparing for his nativity play. And when I saw that, I kind of felt like, oh, perhaps this film isn't going to be very subtle. It's going to be kind of hammering you over the head with what it's trying to achieve. But I think in reality, that's only one of the moments where it's slightly overbearing.
And the way it's shot and everything, almost kind of, I forgive it for that because it's so beautiful. It's through this window with a candlelight in this dark winter, and you go straight from that, and then he does something very unangelic. So I do think it works. There's also the soundtrack. Oh my goodness.
Yes. So this is Scott Walker, who's an avant-garde artist who uses sound. He's been from, he's quite an old chap now, he's in his 70s. And these baroque staccato strings just sets you straight on edge.
Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of flavours of Johnny Greenwood's work for There Will Be Blood. Just contrasting high and low notes, no mid-tones, and it scrapes up your back. It's nails on a chalkboard, and it really sets the tone for the whole film just from those opening bars. It is a dark in terms of tone film, but it's also a very dark film visually. There's a lot of shadow play, there's a lot of candlelight, as you've already mentioned, and I think that really helps the film in terms of not kind of knowing what's going on or why, and the confusion between the parents and the child.
And it's in this big old house with rooms that you're not quite sure, you know, not every room is filled, not every box is ticked, kind of feeling of there's something lurking around the corner and no one can quite get a grip or get a hold or a closeness of one another. And that sets the film so well. And the first thing you said about it was like this decaying, like the house is quite old and decaying in itself. I think there's only a few shots outside, and some of them are through this strange fisheye.
Yeah, it seems easy to, anything with a strange building, it's easy to compare it to The Shining, because The Shining has no sense of geography within it. There are rooms that don't go anywhere, or there is the layout of the hotel in The Shining doesn't make any sense, and that plays into the mental instability of the lead character. But we've got the similar thing going on here.
Yeah,
we see the outside of the house, but at no point can we really tell where any event is taking place. There is a set of staircase that get trampled up and down in the way that a child will do, and that's the only real place that we know, because then we'll see a room that feels very grand that's been done up for a party or something, and you think, have they moved house?
Yeah.
Like, is this a
Have they gone to someone's house?
Yeah.
And these
are different rooms all the time, and you really get a sense that this is a big, big house that it's empty, and they've got these grand beds and these grand tables and cutlery and plates, but all the walls are peeling.
Yeah.
And it must be, it'd be a terribly scary place to be a child in.
So intimidating.
Yeah.
I think mentioning The Shining and saying, well, because what we don't want to do is be like, well, it's been done in The Shining type thing. I think using a location or a house in that way is just so good. It's just one of those things that I think you can get away with doing rather than being like, oh, they did that in The Shining.
Yeah.
It's just a fundamental, brilliant way of conveying a message.
Yes. And I think another film that I'd like to draw it to is The White Ribbon, which, talking of child performances, there's some children in that are excellent. Michael Haneke's film. And this, The Childhood of a Leader, is set during the signing of the Treaty of Versailles, so the end of World War One. And in The White Ribbon, you've got this post-conflict town. Lots of things are going wrong, and sometimes the child are to blame for that. And a lot of the time, perhaps they're not. It's never truly established who is doing the bad things. And it's not obvious who's to blame for this, the rise of this leader, or what will eventually be the rise of this leader, because you've got the relationship with the mother, the father, the maid. It's a lot of layers going into who actually built this character.
I think there's been quite a few films that do this question of who's to blame, recently, like Goodnight Mummy looks at it in terms of the mother-son relationship, and We Need to Talk About Kevin is obviously a huge, like the whole film, the whole book by Lionel Shriver is about that. And this looks at it, but not in such an intense way, I feel. And I feel a lot of times with these questions, there's never one person. And in this film, the scariest bit is you can't point your finger at anyone. It just seems to be this thing that's bubbling up of its own accord. And yes, there are certain things that are upping the temperature, but in general, there's this unknown element that is making this boy the way he is.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting idea of the evil of children.
Yes.
Because children are perhaps undeveloped completely in society and they don't have complete awareness of their actions, a lot of the time, how evil they are, they don't understand, and can be quite cutting and quite brutal. I'm reminded of The Hunt with Mads Mikkelsen, directed by Thomas Vinterberg, and in that film a child accuses Mads Mikkelsen's character of being a paedophile when he's not fully understanding how big of a statement that actually is and the repercussions of that. And I think that could be evident in the childhood of a leader, in that there are big moments that feel like small moments to the child, but they will have a greater, grander effect on the people around him and him as a whole.
Do you think there's a certain amount of the idea that the gap between children and adults is so huge in terms of understanding that there's an amount of kind of the adult not understanding what a small act that is for the child and not reacting accordingly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think we talked about the way that Todd Solondz writes for the relationship between adults and children. And in his films, like Wiener Dog or Happiness, the adults talk to the children in a very blunt, honest way, as if they are grown-ups themselves. And we've got the reverse of that here. This is clearly an intelligent child that is aware of his surroundings slightly. He has some sense of what's going on. This is just at the end of World War One. He's at the age where he's asking questions about himself and the world, but he's still being treated like a younger child than he is.
Definitely. So I mentioned the fisheye shots.
Yes.
What is that about?
Yes, this was something you asked me. I was going to ask you because I don't know.
I ain't got a clue, mate.
No. These are really... So there's one of these in each of the acts.
Yes.
There's just one, I believe. So the child is going on a walk, goes on a walk with his French teacher, played by Stacey Martin, who is excellent in the role.
She's outstanding.
And then as they're walking, we suddenly get this fisheye shot, which is out of style with the rest of the film. It's out of context from the scene because it's a completely different camera placement to any of the others. It's from the other side of the field that they're walking on. They are minor in the shot. They're very small at the bottom of the screen, and you've got these warped edges from the fisheye. And then it goes back to the scene.
Mm.
And he's become very angry.
Mm.
And then in the second act, we have a similar thing that focuses on, from, again, outside of the camera placements of the main scene. The fisheye then comes from the opposite end of the table that they're sitting at during the French lesson. And this shot reveals that Stacey Martin isn't wearing anything under her shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But again, from a different point of view, I thought perhaps they're trying to draw attention to key moments.
Yes. I thought maybe a kind of when people look back on his life as a whole, the kind of warped history, trying to make sense of it, might be part of it.
Mm.
In terms of you try and think, oh, was it something to do with, you know, you always hear these stories about these leaders that when they were younger, they, you know, it is that type of thing. Oh, he would often walk with his French teacher, and there was one occasion where he got incredibly angry, and that this story kind of is used as a kind of evidence. I think to separate them from other people as well. Mm. We try and pinpoint these things that separate them from us.
We want to distance themselves.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From humanity.
Yes.
I want to say, are they, but they're not really one of us, are
yeah.
they? They did this thing that's inhuman.
Yes.
And that means it's okay for us to distance themselves from us.
Because we never did that, did
yeah,
we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They're yeah. creepy. They're really horrible. The one where they're walking, it's a very disturbing image.
Yeah, it almost feels like the point of view of an alien or
yes.
a fly.
Yeah, yeah. Fly.
Mm. Mm. And the actual look of the film, it's quite a muted film. You could say that the settings take place in winter, spring and summer.
Yeah.
But it begins with a misty blue, very desaturated, pale look. And it does get warmer as the film goes on, which is a nice contrast to the actual plot of the film, as he himself becomes much darker
yes.
and much colder and crueler.
Yeah. It's full of little touches like that that just make it so brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, and the cinematography combined with the editing is really interesting in that it lets moments that you don't expect land and cuts quickly elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there are bits where the camera will linger on the bottom of a staircase or linger on a window, and you're unsure perhaps why it's doing this. And then later as the film goes on, there is a particular moment where the camera stays in a shot for a while and you're not quite sure why. And then your eyes bounce around and you figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
But because of the editing earlier in the film, it doesn't feel alien.
Mm.
It doesn't feel like we must be looking out for something. It's very subtly done.
Yeah. There's a particularly good nightmare scene as well early on, which is just of a building that is horrible.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's, and the music, again, Scott yeah. Walker there, the music of nightmares, really wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
So as we started, we mentioned child performances and Tom Sweet in this film, who is Prescott, the lead character. Do you want to talk about him for a moment?
Wow, it's basically all I want to say. really subtly performed, every line is kind of measured and controlled as he gets more control of the adults within the film. Everything about his performance, his eyes in it are so dark and so mysterious. Also, I shouldn't give him credit for this, but his face is very good for the film, and that sort of long blonde hair.
Yeah, it's very angelic face.
Yeah, exactly.
He's and constantly being told that he looks like a girl.
Yes, which he gets very angry about.
Yeah.
There's also quite a lot of physical acting that he
yes.
does, which is very difficult to do, and he does it incredibly
yeah.
well.
And one thing I think a lot of actors will tell you is that the hardest thing in comedy is timing.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid's timing is incredible. There is a particular moment where he won't eat his dinner,
mm-hmm.
and he just slides the plate over, and Helen winces at that moment. Like, that's such a not a vicious thing in any other film, someone sliding their plate over the table, but it's all in the delivery.
Yeah.
And it's like a dagger.
It that is one of the moments where you're like, oh, like literally, he's not going to eat his dinner.
Yeah, like you're on the edge of your seat because this like 8-year-old kid won't finish his peas. And that's all you want, and he won't do it.
And it's terrifying yeah. that he won't.
Yeah. That's something that makes it, like we mentioned earlier, like there's a lot of you have a lot of empathy for this kid because you did those things, and it makes you feel awful about it because you know who this kid grows up to be. And later on, when he mimics his dad, like, just go to your room, and then there's a small moment, and he just screams it back at him. And then runs away. And because he's run away, the dad is defeated.
Exactly.
And this kid has won just by doing the most juvenile thing.
But also there's a certain way that he says, go to your room. There's an emphasis that I'm not going to be able to mimic now, that is just slightly, it shows that intelligence.
Yeah.
So it's not just, it is a juvenile game, but with just this cutting edge of a boy who really knows what he's doing.
Yep. And another top line that really I thought was very funny but very cruel is the French teacher coming up to him after he's locked himself in his room, and he just says, "I'm busy, come back in 3 days." As if he's just like, she's just a secretary, yeah. She's nothing, and all he's just sitting in his room doing nothing.
Exactly.
And everyone in the house knows he's doing nothing.
But how does he win?
Yeah.
Because he's small.
Yeah.
But somehow he's found a way to do it.
Mm.
And he knows what he's doing. And it's like he won't get dressed and he's in this dressing gown, and that's terrifying.
Mm.
And it is that thing of, like, I think a lot in society, this idea that children are innocent and we can control them and this whole thing. And it is that fear of, like, well, what do you do if they just say no? Because often as adults, and if you're a parent, it's kind of about playing this game where, okay, well, we're going now. Well, you can't go because you're the one in control. Like, you're the one responsible. They have the power. And he's realised he's got the power. And at the minute that he's realised that, it's game over.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot in there to talk about in terms of spoilers.
Yes.
So I think we will perhaps move on to that now. So if you haven't watched this film, do go and seek it out. It is a small release, but do try and find it. It's wonderful. Tom Sweet, as we've mentioned, is fantastic. But the supporting cast, Liam Cunningham, who is Sir Davos from Game of Thrones, Berenice Bejo, who you would know from The Artist, Stacey Martin from Nymphomaniac and Tale of Tales, Robert Pattinson, who needs no introduction, does he not? Old R. Pats. But it's a really great cast, but Tom Sweet really takes the limelight from all of them. But do go and find it, and then once you've watched it, come back now, and we'll be talking about third act revelations and any other spoilers. Okay. So, the big spoiler of the film, I think, comes in the title of it.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Because imagine watching it and then seeing that end and being like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. But I think a lot of it is because in the modern era, you can't make a film and have nobody know about it.
Sure.
It just doesn't happen anymore. Like, you had 10 Cloverfield Lane, which came out earlier this year. It was only released in March. It was only announced in January. But even prior to that, we knew that there was a John Goodman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead film that involved both of them being trapped in a basement. It already existed.
Yeah.
This film couldn't have been made. Robert Pattinson can't sign up for a film and for the press not to have some bit of meat to go on. And I think if you actually, you try and sell this film without telling people what it's actually about, how do you do it?
Yeah, I think it's impossible, and I think that is why they've done it that way. And to be honest, it's probably, if I was just sitting watching, trying to look for something to watch, this is the hook that got me in terms of, oh, it's kind of about, like, a childhood of a fascist leader.
Yeah.
You know, that is the thing that you say, oh, I'll give it a go. I can't see another way of being
hooked into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ruin it,
no.
Because I think it's an outstandingly good film, and I think the end is really good. And the way that it does it, in there's this horrendous kind of dizzying shot with that music that just makes you
so
feel like you're going to throw up.
In which the end of the film, the Tom Sweet's eventual incarnation as this fascist leader is revealed, and you have this swooping, swinging camera set in the crowd of his horde of chants for him, and then it just cuts to black, and it's really a fantastic shot to end on. But it is just a shame that you sit through this wonderful film about childhood and behaviour and relationships between parents and how relatable it is for us, to then at the end reveal that that childhood is of this dictator would be such a reveal.
Yeah.
Would it almost be too much? Would it be unbelievable?
Well, would it be a bit like, oh, he was bad and they've just decided that...
He's a big fascist.
Yeah, maybe it would.
Yeah.
But then that's no bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing if you can't totally describe a film in 50 words or whatever, you know? If you can't... Not every film is going to play well in marketing, and that doesn't mean it's a bad film.
Yeah.
It normally means the opposite, probably.
Yeah. And I think the end... So this is the epilogue of the film. And this is also the area that we find, I think, for both of us, the biggest issue in the film. And so we've only really sung its praises so far. But at the end of the film, we see inside the car of the eponymous leader. And the leader is played by Robert Pattinson. So this is the older version of Tom Sweet. And Robert Pattinson is actually in the first scene of the film, in which there is heard dialogue, and he is a friend of Liam Cunningham's father. He's not in the film a lot. He's got about 2 or 3 scenes.
Yeah.
And then we see him as the leader at the end. So this...
Which did confuse me a little bit.
Yeah. And I think... So what it's going for is that the child is actually Robert Pattinson's. It didn't feel like there was any evidence of that.
No. No. It took me a while to be like I was just a bit confused.
Yeah.
I was like, is that Arbatz? That's Arbatz.
Arbatz with a delightfully shaved head.
Yeah.
And good beard. Really,
really
solid
good
beard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time when you're making a film, you can get tunnel vision and you know the script back to front, and you almost feel like everyone else knows the
Such
script back to front.
Such a common mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they get to the end of the film, and then it's like they watch it and think, oh, we didn't actually really make it clear that there was some form of affair between the mother and the friend. There is elements at the start.
Yeah, and there's kind of a bit with her and the husband that kind of indicates that she doesn't want to have sex with him anymore.
Yeah.
And you can kind of piece it together when you look back on it.
But perhaps there aren't enough puzzle pieces to build a full picture.
I would agree.
Yeah. And I think this is why the epilogue also has the title card that says Prescott the Bastard.
Yeah.
Because it literally spells it out for you.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would perhaps be a bit too confusing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these title cards are actually wonderful little clues throughout the film of sort of whetting your appetite.
It's a dragon.
Yes. So this is the title card for Tantrum 3 is, or the third tantrum, quote, "It's a dragon." And we mentioned in the main body of the show a lingering shot where the camera just holds for a moment. We've already seen this before on minute details, so we're used to this pacing. But then in the corner of the shot, we see a candle hit a curtain and gradually start catching fire. And so you think, oh, totally get it. This kid, he's responsible for burning down the house, and the parents are inside it and they're all dead, and he's killed all the people that were signing the Treaty of Versailles. Yeah. And it totally is. This is it. This is where it's all coming together. And then the camera cuts away and there's no development on the fire at all.
Yeah, it's fine. Probably just lost a curtain.
Yeah.
Didn't even notice. Yeah.
it gives you a lot of little nibbles of maybe this is what made him.
Yes.
This is the moment that made him. This is the moment that made him. This is the moment. And it's just saying there is not one moment that defines a person.
Totally. And as we said, you know, it would be great for us who are scarily relating to him if, oh, well, I never set my house on fire. He never does that, though.
Yeah.
He does the stuff that kids do.
Yeah.
And that is such a clever move in the writing of this.
Yeah, and it will leave you thinking for days and days about things you've done as a child and just feel awful about them.
Speak for yourself, Jake.
Oh, were you an angel? Did you finish every meal, did you?
I did. Yeah.
Never slid that plate over. Never did the copycat game.
I never done it.
Never run up the stairs.
I never run.
But I think with this kind of film, because of the name of it, that is the that's the end point. So you know what the end is from the start. I would like to talk about Metrodome.
Yes.
If that's all right. Unless there was any other spoilers or any other things from the film you'd like to discuss.
It's incredibly rich, and I think you need to see it, basically, because we're just talking about all these details that's so rich, and together, please do yourself a favour if you see the film.
Yep, it does have this wonderful contrast of grand beds, and as we mentioned earlier, lots of paintings and frames and candlesticks,
and so many metaphors that we've not even touched on here.
There's a lot to go into. It's a very it feels like it's a heavy film, but it's not really. It manages to be heavy but bubble along as well. You can really lose yourself into it, and the sets feel like photo shoots for Anthropology or something. Mm-hmm. You can totally imagine them like being on the front of Poetry, or and there are flavours of The English Patient as well.
Nice.
In the this post-war decaying property that people are kind of having to pretend is a home when it's really just out of place and out of time.
Talk about Metrodome.
Yeah. So Metrodome is the distributor of this film. And sadly, this week they announced that they were going into administration. And it's a real shame because they're a wonderful distributor. They've put out The Childhood of a Leader, Down Terrace, Ben Wheatley's first film, Evolution, Lucille Hadzihalovich's film from earlier this year. It's got The Falling, which we've mentioned earlier, Feston, Thomas Vinterberg's film from the 90s, Francis Ha, Noah Baumbach's film, one of my favourites, The Grandmaster by Wong Kar-wai. You've got Luca Guadagnino's I Am Love. You've got Mummy. You've got Tangerine. So many wonderful films released by Metrodome, and it's a real shame to see them go into administration this week. And so I would encourage everyone to seek out those films if you can. And it's a real shame to see another distributor that's giving us independent art house film that we desperately need in the UK go under.
Couldn't put it better myself. Really upsetting, actually.
Yeah. So it's a real shame to see them go. So as a last hurrah, do go and watch The Childhood of a Leader, because it is fantastic and it stands for everything that Metrodome did. Just something different, but something grand, and please just go out and watch it.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts on the film?
I really think you put it, I couldn't put it any better. It's really excellent. Treat yourself. Go and see it.
That's it. It's a real treat.
It's a treat.
Yeah. It's in every way, it's a feast for the senses. Except maybe not taste, because the food in it, I mean, Prescott pushes it away. I mean, I would too. It didn't look very nice. No, but it looks great. It sounds great. And it really whips you right into it. And it's a great story that will leave you thinking for a long, long time. So thanks a lot to CSR for letting us use their studio as usual. And do go and check out those other Metrodome films on Curzon Home Cinema if you can. Until next time, I've been Jake Cunningham. And with me, Helen Seymour.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.